getting comfortable. Checking the posture. And begin with the meditations that we do in order to relax the body and in order to bring our awareness of our full body. So in your own time. Employing now the meditational techniques for stability of attention with the rise and fall of the abdomen. elevating your consciousness now to a more subtle level and employing the meditational technique to increase vividness. And so, we once again ask ourselves the question, why are we still in samsara? And broadly speaking, one of the most important points is that we do not understand suffering of ourself and others. And you can say to yourself, well, I do understand suffering, but go deeper. With this not understanding the suffering of self and others, we're stuck here because we see disturbing emotions and delusion as somehow pure and permanent. We have no deep understanding of what happiness is. And so we mislabel suffering as happiness. and we see ourselves, others, objects, interactions, as having permanence from within. A kind of unchanging self of that object. And so the Buddha said, here's a big mistake, here's a huge delusion. We see that which is selfless as having self. And because of this, we're caught up in a network of ignorance. So this ignorance has got to be met and faced squarely. And we need to know that liberation is possible. This requires us to be absolutely clear about the fundamental nature of our mind. We need to recognize and experience the clarity, the knowing. The mind is overwhelmed by afflictive emotions, and instinctively we cling to them. We're directed by them, and we're trapped by them, and we suffer because of them. Think about this. Overwhelmed by afflictive emotions, they take control. Yet we're not foolish, we know most of this. And we know it harms us, and we know it harms others. But what do? I tend to ignore, suppress, endure, or pretend it's not a problem. The Buddha Dharma way is to recognize and acknowledge all of it as soon as possible. apply the knowledge and antidotes of the Lam Rim. Dissolve these afflictions and transform them, and never act them out. His Holiness says that all sentient beings wish for happiness and wish to avoid suffering. And it's true in this life, isn't it, that we can say, you know, I have had happy times. So we need to ask ourselves, how real was that happiness? Did a contentment arise? Or was that happiness ultimately limited? Unsatisfactory? Or temporary? Or illusory? Consider. When unhappiness comes, or suffering, who do you turn to now, and what do you turn to? Perhaps family, work, study, relationships, hobbies or holidays. And when this doesn't work out, or any relief you get is temporary, we tell ourselves stories like, yeah, okay, but next time I'm going to try harder. Next time I'll do this. Next time I'll do that. We have stories we tell ourselves. And we continue along the same lines. But it is true, you can have short-term relief of suffering, and then it's back to square one. And And this habit of looking externally for relief of suffering is very difficult to break. Ask yourselves why and focus. Thank you. So we keep making the same mistakes. Are we unique? No, I don't think so. I don't think we're unique. It's been going on for centuries. And I've written some quotes down here from Shantideva, the most impressive. His work on bodhicitta is just sublime. And he was an 8th century Indian prince and monk. And I've quoted him before, but listen, and this is the 8th century, all suffering in the world comes from seeking pleasure for oneself. Think about the 8 worldly dharmas. All happiness in the world comes from seeking pleasure for others. He also said, although wishing to be rid of misery, they run towards misery itself. I don't want to suffer, but here I come. Run towards it. Although wishing to have happiness, like an enemy, they ignorantly destroy it. Although we want happiness, we destroy it. And this is the one I like the best. We shrink from suffering, but we love the cause. So, this is not new. This is inherent here. So just reviewing the idea we've talked about, it's inherent because we seem to think that happiness and unhappiness depends on external. All happiness comes from external. All unhappiness comes from external. And as I've said before, if you believe that, if you, if you instinctively feel that's true, and we do, then of course all your work is going to go in this direction. You're going to try and control, alter, adjust, grab, grasp, own, have. You're going to do all that. Because that makes sense. If you think that's where your happiness is, and it's the source of unhappiness, that's exactly what you're going to do. And it's a big shock, really, to the system to realise all of this certainly has an impact. Certainly has an impact. But where's the cause? Internal. Internal. And we're not that keen on that. Because if it's internal, it means it's nobody else's fault, and obviously we all know it is actually everybody else's fault. But take this on board, and you realise it's not to do with fault, it's to do with control. You own it. You can control it and you can change it. Always we're hanging on to that it's someone else's fault. It's that out there. And so you have to make up, you have to kind of think of situations where clearly this is not true. So a couple of situations I often give, because I've done it myself. If there's 3 people in a room, and on a table in front of them is a kind of chocolate dessert, right? chocolate dessert. Lama, yes, she used to always use chocolate to give me chocolate. One person looks at the chocolate dessert and goes, oh, lovely. And what you're thinking is, I hope they don't all like it, because I'd like a bit more. You know, it's like, ah! Oh! The second person looks at the same chocolate and goes, ooh, this is going to cause me problems. Perhaps they have diabetes, whatever. But this would be like poison to them, okay? The third person looks at that and goes, yeah, take it or leave it, yes? The chocolate hasn't changed. But here we have pleasure. Here we have pain. And here we have a kind of indifference. Where is this coming from? It can't be coming from the chocolate, can it? It's coming from us. The other example I gave is, again, because I've done it, you know, three people in a pub, three women in a pub, say, let's say women in a pub, and this man comes in the door and your friend goes, oh, look, this guy's coming, he's absolutely gorgeous. You know, and she really likes this person. This person just walked through the door. And the other girl goes, and that one. Yeah. Really? Not my type at all. And the third person looks and goes, yeah. This person has not changed. This person has not changed. And yet what do you have? Desire. Grabby, grabby. Aversion. No, no, no. And yeah, indifference. Yes? You can really do that with any situation. Something comes on the television, some person, some situation comes on, three people watching, all behaving in different ways, and yet that's the same. Yet one person responds with suffering, one person with indifference, one person with joy. Look how people respond in different ways to illness. They don't all respond in the same way. It can be the same illness, the same diagnosis given to three different people, and you can have three completely different responses. See, I'm not saying anything is wrong with any of these responses, but this is what it's about. It's we need to own it. We need to own it. And in that owning of it, it's incumbent upon us to do something about it. Now, not only is instinctively that not what we want to do, it's not our habit, because we all know it's somebody else's fault. As little children, this size wasn't me. Wasn't me. Nobody sat that child down to tell them this, is it? Oh, no, it wasn't me. Instinctively. But society blames externals also as the main cause. So not only are we ignorant, but society is colluding with this ignorance. So not easy. To break the habit of suffering, I think, takes a lot of courage. A lot of courage. We've said this before. Because suffering is a habit, and it can be a safe habit for people. A safe habit. Now, the Buddha understood this. And so when he finally decided that he would teach and help people become liberated from the suffering, the very first teaching he gave was on the Four Noble Truths. Now, some of you have had teachings on the Four Noble Truths before, but it's always worth reviving this. This is why he gave this first truth. So can I just give you out these? And what we're looking at here is the first part, where it is the Four Noble Truths part, not the whole thing. Thank you so much. In looking at the Four Noble Truths, there's lots of different ways to look at. But I think the first thing to really deeply appreciate is this was the first thing the Buddha taught because of suffering. Okay? No one wants to suffer. Everybody relates to that. At no time did the Buddha say, I want you to believe this. That's important. So the first noble truth, the truth of suffering, he said that needed to be fully understood. Fully understood. And the second noble truth, the truth of the origin of suffering. Again, he didn't give any belief system. He said, find the origin and abandon it. You see how it's all doing. It's all active from my point of view. The truth of the cessation of suffering. He said, you know, it can stop. Believe me. He didn't say that. He said, it will stop. Please realize that. And then the truth of the path leading to that cessation of suffering. Again, don't believe. Cultivate it. Cultivate it. So he's asking people not to be passive and believing the word. Not like that. It's asking people to be active, take ownership, deal with it. Another way of looking at this Four Noble Truths is cause and effect. Cause and effect. So the truth of suffering, you'd think if things were cause and effect, you'd start with a cause, eh? If you look at the Four Noble Truths, I remember Geshe Tashi saying, if you're looking at the Four Noble Truths, you'd think, if we were doing it, you'd think, okay, these are the Four Noble Truths. I think I'll start with the origin of suffering. Right? This is the origin. This is the suffering. This is the path, and it will lead to cessation. We'd actually teach it that way, because that's logic. The way the Buddha taught it was first the truth of suffering, because everyone could relate to that. Everyone could relate. So he taught the effect first. Then he taught the cause, which is the truth of the origin of suffering. Then he taught the effect, the truth of the cessation of suffering. Then he taught the cause, the truth of the path leading to the cessation of suffering. And he did it because that's how we suffer. That's how we relate. Makes sense, doesn't it? Yeah. And so when you read in the texts, there is texts that talk about the 12 types of suffering. There's texts talking about the 6 types of sufferings, and there's texts talking about the 3 types of suffering. So guess which one I'm going for? 3 types of suffering. Mostly they talk about 3, but if you go into any depth, they actually explore that even further. It's quite interesting. But 3 is more than good enough. So the first type of suffering is ordinary suffering, yes? The suffering of pain, that unpleasant feeling of body and mind, not getting what we want. And all of this is recognised, isn't it? Birth, ageing, sickness, death. This ordinary type of pain. And I just want you to think. All this pain, this kind of unpleasant feelings that we get, not getting what we want, everything we go through with birth, ageing, sickness and death, think how often you've gone through that in the past. Think of it. Just this one life. Even just this one life. and reflect on that type of pain that we have now, right now. And if you're fortunate to live beyond today, think of what type of pain that type of pain is to come. Because it is to come. It's a very strong reality. And yet, that's not even the suffering the Buddha was talking about. He acknowledged that, but really, that's not the type of suffering that keeps us in samsara. And it's bad enough. And that's called the suffering of suffering. The second type of suffering is called the suffering of change. The suffering of change. Because every experience in samsara is impermanent and it's contaminated by ignorance, every experience has the nature of suffering. Now, this is slightly more difficult to understand, but not, you know, once you go into it, not too difficult. How can we say that every experience has the nature of suffering, the suffering of change? Even if a situation is pleasant, right? Keep that situation long enough and it will become unpleasant. So you've been sitting here, let's say, for 3 hours. You go for a walk. Oh, it's marvellous. Yeah, you get some pleasure walking, 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 walking. Give it a few hours. Does it feel as good? Give it 5 hours. Give it a day. You'll be on your knees. Yes? But how is that possible if walking has the nature of happiness? It hasn't. It has the nature of suffering. Nothing that has the nature of happiness will bring suffering. Can't do it. So the meal you're looking forward to, because you've not eaten for a while, and it's looking, you think, oh, lovely, lovely. And you sit down and you really enjoy that meal. If someone puts the same meal straight away in front of you again, not so enjoyable. And if you manage to get through that and they put another one down, you're ill. How is that possible? If that was pleasure, if that was happiness, it could not change to become suffering. That brings you suffering because it's its nature. It's pervaded by ignorance. All of the second type of suffering, the suffering of change, is pervaded by ignorance. That's its natural state. Anything that brings you pleasure, any type of sensory pleasure, do it long enough, often enough, it will become unsatisfactory, it will become uncomfortable, and it will become painful. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we're wrong. So try to think of something that you do that you really enjoy. Try not to be too anatomical about it. Just think of something you do you really, really enjoy. You're looking forward to it. It seems to have the nature of happiness in it. Imagine if you had to do that every day, 6 or 7 times a day, 12 times a day, 20 times a day. Realistically, if that had the nature of happiness, your happiness would increase. But it will not increase. It will decrease. And it will turn into suffering. Why? Because that's his nature. Can you think of anything that doesn't behave like that. Anything that brings pleasure, anything you're looking forward to, that can't eventually cause suffering, and will. You've done often enough and long enough. So you have to be wise. You've got to ask yourself, how is that possible? How is something out there that is intrinsically happy, how can that possibly bring me suffering? It must be that that's not its nature. There's some temporary relief going on here, some temporary happiness, sure. But that's not its nature. It will bring you suffering because that's its nature. The suffering of change. You're so tired, you come down, you sit in a nice comfy seat. Oh, thank goodness, sit there for 12 hours. What wouldn't you give to get up? This is it. Yes? So now we understand, or we start to come to an idea, the real causes of happiness cannot be the causes of unhappiness, cannot be the causes of suffering. Can't be. But even that is not the real suffering that keeps us bound to samsara. Even that's not it. It has an effect for sure. But even that is not the tight bond that the Buddha talked about. Because that's got more to do with the third type of suffering, sometimes called all-pervasive compounded suffering. And when something's got a name like that, you can guarantee we're going to be getting into it. Now, this one is the difficult one. It can be difficult to understand. So let's just see if we can slowly, meditatively, consider this third type of change, this all-pervasive compounded suffering. When we were doing the death meditation, we talked about the five aggregates, that which makes up our body-mind combo. And it was split into five heaps, taking every aspect of mental activity and our body into account. So what we're going to do with this third type of suffering is take each of these aggregates, which make up this whole body, this whole body mind, and see where suffering comes from. Okay? Right. So just employing a method to calm the body and mind. In a wide sweep, we can say that the body and mind is under the control of afflictions and karma. And this keeps us circling in all the realms of existence without choice. And if that's the case, you can reasonably say that all experiences within samsara is due to ignorance. Broadly, with ignorance, a permanent state of happiness is not possible. all that's possible is the bare fact of unenlightened existence. The basis of all suffering in this and future lives. Conditioned by afflictions and karma, we are under their control. The five aggregates are totally conditioned attachment. They are the basis that we impute I, me, mine. It is the basis for strong self-cherishing and self-grasping. And so we can clearly say that the five aggregates have the nature of suffering. The form aggregate, the body, the internal and external, all conditioned by affliction and karma. No part of the body, no form that is not conditioned by affliction and karma. The aggregate of feeling. All that we experience by contact with this world, physical and mental, all our objects, our thoughts, our dreams and ideas, conditioned by affliction and karma. The aggregate of discrimination, sometimes called perception. The feelings that we produce in contact, recognizing objects, physical and mental, all of that conditioned by affliction and karma. The aggregate of compositional factors, called mental formation sometimes or volition, that directs the mind towards good or bad or neutral. All our karmic driven responses, our attention, our will, our determination, confidence, concentration, wisdom, hate, all of that. Conditioned by affliction and karma. Consciousness itself conditioned by affliction and karma. Imagine that your condition now the five aggregates you have, imagine them like a tree. Imagine that you're like a tree. And your roots are going deep into the ground. And the roots of the tree is like the ignorance that pervades everything, feeds everything. Ignorance of karma, the laws of causality. Ignorance of the true nature of reality. This is our roots, and it's drawing in and feeding the rest. It feeds the trunk of the tree, like self-grasping the trunk. It apprehends I, me, mine. And this I, me, mine trunk of your tree gives rise to the branches of afflictive emotions. Spawned by attachment and aversion. And these branches give rise to stems of action of body, speech and mind. All being fed by ignorance. And the stems produce fruit of resultant karma. Look at the fruit. Where did it come from? The stems of actions of body, speech and mind. What fed the stems? The branches of afflictive emotions. Where did that come from? The trunk of self-grasping. And where did that come from? The deep roots of ignorance. The fruit is the same substance as the stems, the branches, the trunk, and the roots. It is the nature of suffering. So now consider that the origins of suffering, the origin of suffering, lies in suffering itself. Just consider that. The origin of suffering lies in suffering itself. From the roots to the fruit, all has the nature of suffering due to being controlled by affliction and karma. All our aggregates, everything that makes up this body-mind combination, controlled by affliction and karma. This is the third type of suffering. Difficult to grasp, but it's what keeps us circling in samsara. Thank you. Take some study, take some meditation, take some reflection to help. Look at the handout again. And we're looking at the bottom half, at the causes and conditions that lead to suffering. This is taken from Geshe Tashi's Foundation of Buddhist Thought. In the first panel, you see delusion, ignorance. Ignorance of what? Of the selflessness of person and of phenomena. And so, this can lead you into study of the two truths, conventional and ultimate truth. So we misknow reality, and we misknow the laws of causality. If we developed understanding of causality dependency, if we developed that type of understanding, we would reduce our ignorance and get rid of the ignorance that of in relation to phenomena. If we could work out, if we can get to grasp with causal dependency, that directly hits that ignorance. If we could develop an understanding of the ultimate nature of reality, how things actually exist, not how they appear to exist, that directly affects, counteracts the ignorance of the selflessness of persons and phenomena. And so these two type of truths are very useful to study, because that's the ignorance. And if it was just something that we just didn't know, as if we were like an empty vessel, I don't know that, I'll go and learn it, fill up that vessel, I'm fine. But it's not like that. The vessel's already full. Our vessels are full. We're full of ignorance, misknowing how things actually exist. So before you can do anything, you have to attack this. And it has to be emptied. It has to be cleaned. It has to be made ready for the truth. It's not in the West. If we don't know something, we go out, we learn it, we add it to our knowledge. We add it to our knowledge. This is how we do it. This is not like this. This is not this type of ignorance. It's this misknowing. We're already full of misknowing. That has to be tackled. Now, what does that ignorance lead to? Well, if you have an ignorance of the selflessness, you know, you think you have a self, and your ignorance of the things that are selfless. So you think you have there's a permanent me, Mary, here, somewhere. I know bits are falling in bits. Somewhere in it, there's me, the soul. And as soon as I think that that's there permanent, there's something there that's permanent that's me, then me becomes very important. And then there's the I. And as soon as you've got me and I, you've got mine. Thank you very much. It's mine. It's not yours. Mine. I want that, and I want that. I want that, and this, like. And then, I don't want this, I don't want that, I don't want the next thing. And that's what leads to attachment and aversion. Two great poisons. What does that lead to, those poisons? It leads to actions of body, speech and mind. Now, those actions of body, speech and mind that come from attachment and aversion, which comes from a deep ignorance of how things actually exist, how can they be positive? Look where they come from. Everything is interdependent, yes? How? They're not. And so suffering occurs. And when we say the source of suffering, the origin of suffering is within suffering itself, look what it says, the truth of the origin. the truth of suffering. We need to think about this, certainly, but it really is worth thinking about. If you're looking at that, you could say, well, I'm sorry, but if everything I do in body, speech and mind is kind of negative, I'm sorry, why am I here? What is the point? Yes? The point is, we own it. We can change it. And when Geshe Tashi first taught that to us, he says there's one of the ways he said it, he says, it's like a car. Imagine that your journey through samsara is like a car. If you want to stop that car, what you could do is turn the ignition off, right? That car's going nowhere. That car of ignorance is going nowhere, is it? That car of suffering. And he likened ignorance to that ignition. That ignition. And then he said something like, but that's quite difficult because that needs a lot of wisdom here, that ignition. So while I'm working on my wisdom, I still want to stop that car. So take the wheels off. If you take the wheels off that car, even if the ignition's running, it's going nowhere. And he likened taking the wheels off is looking at our mental, physical and verbal actions. Understanding how karma works. Abandoning negative actions that are very clearly negative. And adopting positive actions. And he said, when you take refuge, you stand at that point. You stand at that point when you take refuge. And you look back and you purify all your negative actions in the past. You purify that. Then you look forward and you watch your ethics. Yes? You live well. And then organically, this begins to change. This begins to change. And you're still working on the wisdom aspect. You're still working on the bodhicitta, but basically this is about wisdom, but still. You're still working on the wisdom. But you're halting this. You're halting it. You're purifying what happened before you took refuge. We'll go into refuge later. Don't worry about that. But you come to a point when you think, this is the way I'm going, right? This is the way I'm going. Yeah, I'm going with this. So there are, what you do is you look back and you think, oh dear, okay, right. I don't want to suffer the consequences of things I've done in the past. But karma kind of ripens and you suffer. Is there any way that I can mitigate or even get rid of this negative karma? And the answer is yes. There are many, many types of actions that you can engage in that purifies. Okay, so you're working on your purification. The car has stopped. But you start looking forward. Well, how do I behave now? I'm purifying past. I make sure that what I'm going to do from now on with my body, speech and mind is a lot better than what I did before. Based on understanding of suffering, based on understanding some understanding of wisdom, and based mostly on my understanding of karma. That's what that's about. Any questions about that? Just think about it for a moment. It's interesting. I noted down what His Holiness said about this. When he was talking about the Third Noble Truth, he said, usually, when we think my body and my mind, we develop self-cherishing. But when we meditate on the third all-pervasive suffering, we develop renunciation. This definite emergence from this obsession with external, worldly, eight-worldly dharmas. If you want to develop that renunciation, meditate, as Holy says, meditating on this third type of suffering, all-pervasive suffering, thinking about it, quizzing your mind about it. Doesn't matter how difficult it is, each time you do it, it'll become clearer. If you do that, you develop renunciation. But if you're going to think my body, my mind, then you develop self-cherishing. Meditate on the third type of suffering, you develop renunciation.
How would you suggest meditating on all-pervasive suffering? Like, would you say go find a book that you can take the little snippets out of to meditate on?
This book here has, I mean, all the outlines have got all the different types of suffering in it.
Oh, the guidelines.
Yes.
I've got that one, yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. But every book on the Lam Rim will have the Four Noble Truths in it. It'll have suffering, different types of suffering. There's lots of texts. The texts are good. Outlines are good. But nothing beats bringing your own experience to it. Mm-hmm. But it's difficult with the third one. I personally find going through the aggregates the clearest way, the way I've done with you just now, is for me, maybe not for you, but for me, the clearest way. Mm-hmm. If you're not used to thinking about aggregates or skandhas or heaps, it might be difficult. But if you just think that what they're really saying is this body-mind combination, mm-hmm. and it's taking all of it, and it's splitting it up in different ways, taking each part and saying, look at that. What's controlling that? Look at that. And when you look at all five, and it's all being controlled by affliction and karma, right? Put it all together again. Affliction and karma. If you then look at the causes and conditions that lead to suffering, then it's not a case of getting, it's too much. Sometimes people lose too much. No. You think about it. What can I do right now? Well, working with your wisdom, getting that clearer, developing an understanding of the two truths, very important, because that's your route. But in the meantime, take the wheels off the car. Understand karma. Work with karma. Purify. And then what happens is the purification makes your mind clearer. It really does. It makes your mind clearer. And you want to gain merit as well, because by doing positive actions, gaining merit, your mind becomes richer. And what you end up is having a mind that's rich and clear and ready. Mm-hmm. Ready for the truth. There's so much we can do. What we're talking about, this third suffering, sometimes that can lead to people going, oh, well, I don't want to hear anymore. No, I'm sorry. The first bit is bad enough. I think the second type of suffering is a bit dodgy, but as for the third, no. But really, that's the third is the key. That's the key.
The all-pervasive.
Yeah, that's the key. We have difficulty with the first one.
Thank you.
Okay. Just before you go for your break, I'd like, the other thing I wrote about, again, Shantideva is just full of this, you know, you could just do the whole thing on Shantideva. But he said, there is an advantage to suffering. He said, there is an advantage to suffering. He said that with suffering, he called it agony, arrogance disappears. That was his observation. That when someone actually suffers, if they've got that type of mind, you know, they're trying hard on the Dharma path, what happens is that with that suffering, with that agony, arrogance of I, me, mind, self-cherishing, tends to disappear. And compassion grows for those suffering similar. And he says, those that have suffering tend to shun negative conduct, tend to shun it. And he noticed that people who have suffering can take joy where others cannot. This is not a poster thing, campaign for let's go suffering. But it's interesting. Please have a nice break.